Good afternoon, and thank you for coming. We have here today Cardinal Francis George of Chicago and Cardinal Donald Worrell of Washington to address questions relating to the first general congregation of this papal transition. According to how we planned this conference, Cardinal George will speak first for a few moments, setting the scene, and Cardinal Worrell will speak next. That will be followed by questions. Thank you. Cardinal George?
Thank you, Sister.
Yeah, we thought we'd say a few things so perhaps you wouldn't have to draw out all the information by questioning us. We went into the Synod Hall, which is where the general congregations will meet, and the first order was always to pray, so we said the traditional prayers to the Holy Spirit before a meeting of major importance. And they had to do some work with the electronic apparatus. You have something on your seats that enables you to speak, and enables you also to get one of five languages into which everything is translated. It enables you to vote. And so they took a few practice votes to be sure how many cardinals were present. 142 cardinals were present in the hall this morning. And once the prayers were said and the electronic gadgetry was working and people understood what they had to do, then the Cardinal Dean, who was Cardinal Sedano, as you know, welcomed us and introduced the purpose of our being here, which we all know, by saying a little bit about the history of the conclave, so the way in which, since 1100 now, the popes have been elected. And he said two things that I think are important, struck me anyway. He said that the conclaves are held in the way they are to be sure that they're free, that the cardinals are free to stand before God and take that oath that we vote for the one we believe best suited for the office of papacy, and therefore free from outside pressures, and hopefully free from internal pressures too, because of the profound spiritual motivation that brings us there. And the second thing then he said was the conclave should be prayerful. And as the last conclave, the only one I've been part of, is any clue, then of course they will be prayerful, because as you can read on the Vatican website, the order of the day includes a lot of prayers once we are together in conclave. It was also said that we are to take the time necessary. Someone quoted St. Thomas of Aquinas, where he said, you should be very slow in deliberation and then very quick in decision making. So the decision making is the conclave, and the deliberating is the general congregations. There was nothing said about how long we will be before we go into conclave. That wasn't talked about, and that decision obviously can't be made yet. But I think that caught the sense of everyone there, that we need to take the time necessary. And so after the reading of the Apostolic Constitution, that is the rule of what we're about, then we went on and we took an oath, I think. Do you want to talk to that?
Your Eminence, thank you. One of the most striking moments, and it was more than a moment, it took a good bit of time, was the actual taking of the oath. We were all invited to take a look at the actual document telling us how the conclave would be run, and also reflects on the general congregations. But then we all individually had to take the oath. And I was very impressed by the solemnity of the fact that each cardinal had to leave his seat, walk down the aisle, go and stand in front of the Book of the Gospels, and there's a crucifix that was carried in, held there, and you take the oath promising to not reveal anything that goes on in the conclave. And you take it in your own names. You announce who you are, you put your hand on the gospel, and you swear that oath. It's very, very solemn. And in the midst of 142 cardinals doing that, there was, for me, a sense that we're beginning now this extraordinary moment in the life of the church. There's an interesting element in all of this. There's the coffee break. The coffee break, much like anyone who has attended a synod knows, is about a half hour long, because it provides everybody a chance to actually talk to one another rather than just the person who's seated on either side of you. Then, following this break, we began what I hope is going to be the rest of the time we have together, just hearing from bishops what they see as the concerns, the life of the church. I hope we're going to hear from their perspective as a bishop, a local bishop. So that was basically what transpired this morning. And we'll go back this afternoon and pick up where we left off.
Thank you, Aaron. We're open to questions now. The procedure will be, if you have a question, raise your hand, and if called upon, go to the microphone you have here, state your name, your agency, to whom you're addressing your question, and finally your question. Are there any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Sister Ann Thompson from NBC News, Permanent World, Permanent Board. You spoke about the coffee break. Certainly one of the things that making headlines today is Cardinal O'Brien's admission yesterday that his sexual conduct was not what was expected of a priest, a bishop, or a cardinal. Was that talked about this morning, either formally or informally? And what, if any, reaction do you have to that admission, and what kind of shadow, if you will, does it cast over these proceedings? Thank you.
And thank you. In the group that I had coffee with, and that's really sort of a wandering event. You pick up a cup of coffee and move around. That topic, it did not come up. I think that's a matter between the cardinal and the Holy See, but it certainly wasn't discussed with anyone I was having coffee.
Nor did it come up in any conversation I had. It's a tragic moment for him, certainly. The tragic moment was when he was guilty of misconduct, and then the consequences play themselves out now. But there was no conversation about that, and I'm not sure that the personal tragedy of your cardinal will have much influence on the discussions, but that remains to be seen. It hasn't been so.
Yes.
Amy Kello from Fox News. This is for Cardinal George, because this is your second conclave, yeah? And I would like to know how you see the difference between this moment and the moment of the conclave after the death of John Paul II.
Thank you. What's different for me, because it's my second conclave, and so I come with certain expectations because of my past experience. Whereas 8 years ago, I had no expectations. I didn't know what to expect at all. So it's different for me personally. The moment is also different for the church because, as you said, the Pope didn't die, he resigned. And so the see is still vacant. That's the canonical reality. But it also raises the question whether or not that resignation has impacted our sense of the papal office. And I'm not sure whether it has or it hasn't. Or maybe it's too soon to tell. We haven't had that discussion, as Cardinal Wuerl said. We haven't discussed anything that's a lot of content at this point. But we'll see. As they begin to speak about not just where they're from, but also the conditions of government here, and I imagine that they will, perhaps that issue will come up, but it hasn't so far.
Thank you.
Phil Covello from Reuters here in Rome. I think it was you, Cardinal George Blasis, who said before that you were told or you were praying about being slow in deliberation. You discussed, you mentioned, I think, St. Thomas Aquinas, slow in deliberation and then make your decision quickly. We still don't even know whether you're going to have two meetings a day. The church is in an incredibly unique period in its history, and people are already saying the conclave is going to start on Sunday, on Monday. Are you in any... We're saying it, not you. there's all kinds of speculation. So I don't feel that you're being rushed and railroaded to, you know, get this going really quickly. And secondly, can either of you tell us, please, if any of your fellow cardinals, either in the formal presentations that the 13, I think, made, or during the coffee breaks, discussed the report on one of the Vatican leaks and whether you would like a formal briefing about its contents during the general congregation?
Well, we have a decision to make this afternoon. It's whether we're going to meet tomorrow afternoon. That's as far as we've gotten. There is no talk among ourselves, officially anyway, so far, about when the conclave might begin. And that's something that will have to be decided collectively by the cardinals. I've said that for a couple of weeks now, and that's where we're going. So, I'm not sure, nor does anybody know when the conclave will begin. As far as the question about the state of the church here in Rome, I would imagine that as we move along, there will be questioning of cardinals involved in the government of the Curia to see what they think has to be changed. And in that context, anything can come up, I suppose.
And in answer to the question about feeling rushed, the impression I took away from this morning was that we're not even being asked or told what type of methodology, what type of a structure to use. We're just being told you can do pretty much what you want in terms of the time frame, when you want to meet, how often you want to meet. I think we're just feeling our way right now in trying to determine what's the best way for us to proceed. Remember, there are many of us in this conclave who were not in the last one, so this is all uncharted water for many of us.
Father Reese.
Father Tom Reese from the National Catholic Reporter. I was wondering if the two of you could tell us your own personal views on the pluses and minuses, the pros and cons of having the conclave begin on the 15th or having it begin earlier. What are your views on that?
Well, Tom, since I'm holding the mic, I'll start it and I'll pass this over to Cardinal George. I really don't have a date in mind when all this should start. But I do think that the idea of having these several days to hear what it is that anyone wants to say is very important. We're going to have to make a decision somewhere along the line when we think the conclave should begin. I think a lot of that's just going to depend on what we hear and how many people have something they want to say and how often they want to say it. And then we'll make our way as we go through that process. I don't want to keep tying this back to the experience of synods, but the church has done synods now for a long time, and you block time for people to speak. But once they've spoken, if they don't feel the need to say anything more, the good thing to do is be able just to conclude it.
I'm curious, if you don't mind my asking, Father Reese, where did the 15th date come from? The first I heard about the 15th is sort of a target date.
The 15th.
Well, that's been changed, of course. Yeah. So, I'm sorry, I thought you meant the 15th of March. The only outside limit that is in the back of all our minds, I think, is Holy Week. We'd like to be done before Holy Week starts and have a Pope and we go back to our dioceses. I'm sure all of us are thinking of that. But that's not been talked about. That's just my opinion, but I would assume that others would be of that same mind. But basically, it's what Cardinal Wolf said, we'll take the time necessary to do the job well.
And Roger?
Anne Rogers from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. During the general congregations for the last conclave, there was a lot of talk about how important Cardinal Ratzinger's leadership style was. What can you tell us about Cardinal Sedano's leadership style?
Well, Cardinal Sedano was a canonist, and Cardinal Ratzinger was a theologian. The canonical style is, a bit more direct, perhaps. Cardinal Ratzinger was a genius at not only his own thinking, but in encapsulating the thinking of others in such a way that there was a synthesis at the end of the day. We haven't seen that opportunity there for Cardinal Sedano, but Cardinal Sedano is very clear in giving instructions and very clear in presenting the issues. So it's a different personality, it's also a difference in academic training, but it's effective in either case.
I think you've answered that. There's really not much more that one can say. We've had a good morning, we just started, and we concluded on time. If that's any indication of leadership style, there we have the leadership.
Jeremy.
Thank you, Sister. Two questions, one for Cardinal Wuerl and one for Cardinal George. The second one would be the procedure of the congregation this time versus last time. It seemed like it might have been different. We had more access, we saw pictures of you, we got a full briefing this time. Was there any difference? So why don't I start there?
Well, I think that the procedure internally is the same. The atmosphere is a little different because of Father Reese said, but the procedure is exactly the same. It's even the same constitution. It's just a few small items because we're following a resignation and not a death. So externally, perhaps they decided that it's best to talk to the press instead of not talk to the press. And so we hope that they would follow up with that and we're off to a better start, perhaps, than last time.
The motu proprio, what we understand from it, is it your understanding that you have to wait for all the cardinal electors to be in place before you can vote on a start date for the conclave, and that it has to be unanimous once that happens, or do you have a different understanding of what has to be done, the rules of the road, so to speak, this time?
The talking about the motu proprio, where I received it was the consensus. And I was fortunate to have a canonist seated behind me. There seems to be the consensus that we do have to wait for the cardinals to get there. But once everyone is there, then decision can be made. Now, one of the things about dealing with canonical interpretations is if you get three canonists, you'll probably have four interpretations. But that's just the nature of it. That's just the nature of canonical interpretation. But you asked me what my read of it was, and I think we have to wait for everybody to be there.
My name is Ferdinand Fluchin, and I'm a journalist that worked for the Russian Internet. Which candidate, in your opinion, has better chances to reform the Curia? An Italian one because he knows the mechanisms, or a foreign one because he has no ties with Rome?
You try that.
I could begin by saying that's a very good question. However,
you're not going to get an answer.
there's really no way to answer that, because the focus of the conclave, in my opinion, has to be on the spiritual mission of the church. Who will best lead the Catholic Church into the future? And we already have great parameters set for that. We just had a synod on the new evangelization, we had a year of faith, all of these wonderful spiritual focuses. And so I think that's where at least my attention is going to be focused.
John Allen?
First of all, thank you both for doing this. We know you have very busy days. Cardinal George, this question is for you. You will remember last time in 2005, one of the early general congregation meetings, there was a sort of informal agreement among you not to talk to the press during this period. And you said your early perception is the mood is a little bit more press-friendly this time. I'm just wondering, perhaps, was there any conversation along those lines in the general congregation today?
There wasn't a conversation, but the Cardinal Deacon was kind enough to share with us the way in which they were going to try to remain in contact with the press until, of course, the conclave begins. And so he outlined for us what I think, if you were present at the 1 o'clock briefing, was it, what they were going to do, and presented it as kind of a model of how we might also conduct ourselves if we're talking to the press. No, they said nothing about a problem in making yourself available. They did point out that we always took an oath of confidentiality, and so there's a problem of contact. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hello, I'm Brittany Walsh with Fox News. A question. There's been some talk about the fact that the changes of the to the conclave voting with the introduction of the two-thirds, which Pope Benedict introduced back in 2009. There's been a lot of discussion about if this will make it a longer conclave or no. And I know it's hard to say, but in terms of your experience in the past conclaves, do you think this will have any kind of impact on the nature of the voting and the length of the conclave? Thank you.
I can't answer that last part, and I'm going to give the mic to Cardinal George about the difference. But when you look at all of the conclaves that have taken place over centuries, some of them have been long, some of them have been short, some of them have been dramatically short, and some of them have been agonizingly long, but they've all had that two-thirds vote. So I don't think that's going to impact much. But then again, I can't speak from one conclave to another because this is my first one.
I don't think it made any difference in the last conclave. The church works not through majority votes exactly, but through consensus. And that's what happens in the synods all the time. So that is certainly something, if you're in an act of discernment, that you want to see realized. Otherwise, you can have what's called, even in secular terms, the tyranny of the majority. That is, if you just get a bare majority and you impose your will on half of whatever you're talking about, the body politic, the College of Cardinals, you don't have the spirit of freedom at work. And so if the spirit is truly guiding us, and we pray devoutly that the spirit is, then you'll want to see a consensus. And that's when we're taking enough time to go in there where you'll see where the consensus lies. It's consensus you're looking for. You might look at individual numbers. You have to count the votes, obviously. But the votes at the end should give evidence of a consensus of mind and heart.
Yes. Down to the microphone, please. Again, Dorita Gomez from Univision News. Since people are talking about the date to begin the conclave, is it a risk to have a Holy Week without a new Pope?
As I think was mentioned, we would like to have a new Pope, I think all of us, by Holy Week, but we can't tell you the date of the conclave. We don't know.
Yes. Russia.
Your Eminence, thank you. I want to ask a particularly American question, if that's okay. I know we're talking about the church, but in a way, you're the American representatives for the faithful at the conclave. I'm wondering what you might say to your brother cardinals about what the American faithful would want or desire or be owed by the next pope.
I think we bring a perspective from the Church in the United States, and during these discussions, when we're part of the sharing of information that allows for this consensus out of which we would hope to choose the next pope, I think one of the things that we'll be bringing is our experience of the vitality of faith. I think we talk about some of the new things that are a sign of a new Pentecost. The number of young people coming into the church, the number of young people being associated willingly with the church. And I'm talking now also about people in the rite of Christian initiation of adults. Just as one sign that there is a sense that the church is very much alive. You see that in parishes, you see that when you get into the ordinary life of the faithful. So I think that's one of the things that we can bring, a hope, but also a practical experience of what it is today that we are dealing with when we face a very secular culture and we're trying to bring a very spiritual message.
I suppose that people from different parts of the world will speak to the issues. There's the vitality, there's also the challenge of a very different anthropology that we work out of in the vision of faith and that our culture works out of in making political decisions. It's a philosophical basis of divergence there, not so much rules, but vision of what needs to be human, that is in some contrast. And that's true everywhere in the world, but in different ways. The important thing is that the Pope be able to speak to the whole world. And there is as much necessity in being able to speak to people of the Congo or of Malaysia as to people of Canada or the United States. We're 5% of 1.3 billion Catholics. And sometimes our agenda is truly universal and good for everybody, and sometimes it's not. And that will be listened to from that perspective, from what I know, and I know a good number of folks who come from other parts of the world. They have the same openness to us that they would have to others. And what we say that they can agree with, they'll take. And what we say they can't agree with, they won't be influenced by. But everybody will try to see to it that we find a Holy Father for the Church, a Father for all the peoples. And that's the first concern. We're here because of the clergy of Rome. We each have Roman titles. I'm a cardinal priest of the Holy Roman Church, the title of St. Bartholomew on the Tiber Island. That gives me a right to be in there. The fact that I'm Archbishop of Chicago doesn't give me any rights at all. So it's good to understand that, because it's a perspective that isn't always well understood.
I'm Sokolowski from the Voice of America. I wonder if, when you're thinking about who might best lead the church, if that includes what a possible candidate's approach might be to the issue of sexual misconduct by clergy.
Well, one of the reasons why we have these periods when we can be talking among ourselves, why we even have a general congregation, is to get some sense of where an individual cardinal would be coming from across the board. And I think we'd probably be listening to what a cardinal has to say that touches on the great issues of the moment. And the really great challenge of the church today is the spiritual mission of keeping the gospel active in the lives of people, bringing people to an experience of a relationship with God. I think that's the great challenge in the modern culture. And so we'll be listening to that, but we'll be listening to lots of other aspects of a person's personal experience.
I think that will be an important issue. It is certainly in the minds and hearts of many of us because we have victims now of sexual abuse, and they're not just victims of sexual abuse by teachers or politicians or even fathers and uncles. They've been abused by a Catholic priest, sometimes by a Catholic bishop, and sometimes the abuse has been not addressed as it should have been by Catholic bishops. That is a terrible wound in the body of the church, and it has to be looked at. I think that when we came over here, a small delegation, after we passed the charter, I wanted to put it into the Code of Canon Law, because the Code of Canon Law didn't provide for permanent dismissal from the priesthood because of this delict, this crime. There are reasons why it didn't. We came and said there must be zero tolerance. It took a while to introduce those norms, first of all, for us in the United States, and now those norms are universal for the whole church. So whoever's elected pope, he governs by law. We all do, not by whim or desire on our part. So we're governed by law in all particulars. The church is not a tyranny. So he obviously has to accept the universal code of the church now, which is zero tolerance for anyone who has ever abused a minor child, and therefore may not remain in public ministry in the church. So that has to be accepted, and I think that will not be a problem, not only because it's now in the universal code, but a number of us talked to different hierarchies in the past several years when India was trying to come to terms with this and what should be their particular norms. We're very clear, if you don't do this now, you'll do it later. Do it now. And they did. So their norms are ours, and now they're the whole world's. There are a number of places where that conversation has taken place. I think there's a deep-seated conviction, certainly on the part of anyone who's a pastor in a diocese, that this has to be continually addressed, not just to be sure it doesn't happen again. You know, take a look at the statistics, it looks as if the incidence of abuse is practically zero right now, as far as we can tell. But there's still victims. And the wound, therefore, is deep in their hearts and minds very often. And as long as it's with them, it's with all of us. And that will last for a long time. So the next pope has to be very aware of this. Yeah.
And that was our final question. Thank you very much for coming. We'll let you know if there's going to be another press briefing. Thank you.
Thank you, Cardinal George.
Thank you, Cardinal George.